Hello, welcome to Wellbeing. I'm Graham Wilson. Up until recently, the greatest global health challenge was that of infectious diseases. It appears now that has been overtaken by something else. And to talk about this new threat to global health, I'm joined by Dr. Brendan Nguyen, who is a registrar at Royal Prince Alfred Hospital in Sydney, clinical lecturer at the University of Sydney, and he's involved in the analysis of large global clinical trials as well as population health research, focusing on common chronic diseases such as diabetes, cardiovascular disease, and kidney disease. Brendan, welcome to Wellbeing.
Thanks for having me, Graham.
What is this new threat to global health?
It's called multimorbidity, and it's a phenomenon where people suffer more than one chronic condition at the same time. And it's becoming increasingly common not only through the Western world, but also in low and middle income countries. Over the past couple of decades, we've made great inroads into reducing deaths and morbidity from infectious diseases. But now chronic diseases such as diabetes, hypertension, and cholesterol problems are becoming increasingly important. And when these conditions occur together in the same person, they're normally termed multi-morbidity, and it's an increasing challenge both for our health system here in Australia and overseas.
People may have heard of comorbidity. Is there a subtle difference, or is it quite a big difference?
Yeah, Graham, it's a fairly subtle difference. The main difference being a slightly different perspective. When we talk about comorbidities, we're talking about conditions that are ancillary to the main problem or the main condition. But in multimorbidity, what we're talking about is multiple chronic diseases interacting with each other and all of them being equally important. So it's an issue of framing which one, rather than having conditions that are more important than one another, having a number of conditions that are equally important and contributing to a person's quality of life, their utilization of healthcare, and their risk of adverse outcomes.
Just to put a time frame on this, when did it emerge that multimorbidity was such an issue? It's a fairly recent thing.
Yeah, I think increasingly people were realizing, both researchers, clinicians, academics, and people involved in health policy, that this is going to be a challenge in Australia for our healthcare system. From a clinical point of view, I work as a doctor at Royal Prince Alfred Hospital, and I look after general medical patients and also patients with kidney disease. And in my day-to-day work, I know that this has always been common. This is a common challenge and something we do every day, trying to balance managing people's different chronic conditions. But what we don't know is the rate at which multimorbidity is increasing over time very well, and how common it is. Our best estimates in Australia show that about a quarter of the population has two or more chronic conditions, so what we would traditionally define as multimorbidity. But that proportion is much higher in the numbers we see in the healthcare system. So, for example, in general practice, about half of all patients seen by a GP have multimorbidity. And we know that one of the main drivers of multimorbidity is an ageing population. And in Australia, we know that's happening over time. So we expect multimorbidity to become an increasing problem. And that's the same wherever you look overseas, whether it's in Australia, the United Kingdom, the United States, and even in low and middle income countries, it's a problem too.
So somebody may present at their doctor and they've got a heart condition, they have diabetes, they may even be depressed. Would that be the kind of cluster that would count as multimorbidity?
Absolutely. And the example that you've given there is probably one of the most common clusters of chronic conditions. Mm-hmm. The most common chronic conditions that we tend to see here in Australia, and they occur together in a couple of different ways, is high blood pressure, arthritis, cholesterol problems, depression, chronic back pain, reflux disease, and type 2 diabetes. So those chronic conditions in a number of different combinations are normally the most common presentations of multimorbidity that we tend to see.
Why is it important to recognise multi-morbidity as a thing in itself?
That's a good question. And the main reason we need to think about multi-morbidity separately and therefore prioritise it in research and the way we design health systems is that when people have multiple chronic conditions, their management becomes much more complex. And our health system is really designed to manage single conditions rather than a whole combination of conditions in the same person. And if we look at many of the clinical practice guidelines that doctors and other clinicians use to guide our care, most of those guidelines are written about single conditions, and the evidence from which those guidelines derive their basis is from trials that often exclude people with multiple chronic conditions. So the question of the next thing that needs to be done is to try and change our health systems to better cope and care for people with chronic conditions, because that, as it stands at the moment, our health system is more focused on managing one disease at a time rather than multiple chronic conditions in the same person.
I guess the rationale behind managing one disease at a time is to try and keep the data pure so that you know exactly what's causing what when it applies to one condition only.
That's absolutely right, and that's why many of the clinical trials which inform our practice and inform guidelines exclude people with chronic conditions. But that's really not the reality that we're dealing with in day-to-day practice. And it's time that we need to prioritise the kind of research that focuses or includes people with multiple chronic conditions so that it better reflects the kind of care we're providing in day-to-day practice.
What issues come up when these diseases are not seen together, you know, when only one thing is treated? Another way of putting it, perhaps, is what is the advantage of seeing them all as a cluster?
The advantage is, there are multiple advantages. The first being for individuals is that if you look at all the conditions in totality within a single person, you're much more likely to get holistic care. You're much more likely to get care that takes into account each of the conditions. You're going to avoid complications of treating each condition individually, such as what we call polypharmacy, where people are inadvertently prescribed multiple medications that interact with each other and can lead to side effects. Mm-hmm. And from a health systems point of view, if we think about multi-morbidity more actively, we can redesign the healthcare system to make it less fractured and more integrated, and therefore more efficient, and therefore reduce healthcare costs or contain healthcare costs, which is an important priority in itself.
Wouldn't a doctor who's looking at a patient holistically be doing that more or less anyway?
They are, and we certainly are already, but the key message is that what we're doing is not guided by a lot of evidence. We're doing that every day as clinicians, but the evidence that informs our decisions and judgments is not really there. So one of the key messages that we're thinking about now and talking about is how to prioritise this kind of research so that we can better inform the care of patients and so that we can better inform the health system and how to redesign it and change it to better suit the needs in the 21st century.
So it's a matter of research that's needed to streamline how it's done, to systematise it right across the healthcare system.
Yeah, that's right. There are still many questions about multi-morbidity that we just don't know very well. We know why some of the conditions seem to cluster together, but we don't know why others seem to cluster together when they have different risk factors. We don't know how effectively health services are dealing with multiple chronic conditions in the same person. And of course, as I mentioned before, the treatment guidelines that we use don't really often take into account multi-morbidity. So if we can prioritise this kind of research, we can better inform clinical practice and rethink how we're going to design health systems.
I'm talking to Dr. Brendan Nguyen on Wellbeing Today. He's a registrar at Royal Prince Alfred Hospital in Sydney and clinical lecturer at the University of Sydney, involved in the analysis of large global clinical trials as well as population health research, focusing on common chronic diseases such as diabetes, cardiovascular and kidney disease. And when more than two of these are present in one person, it's known as multi-morbidity, and more research is being done into this. Brendan, I'm wondering if it is a sign of our Western so-called lifestyle that multi-morbidity is present, or is it seen in all populations across the globe?
It's a good question, and to address the second point first, we are seeing it not only in developed countries like Australia and the US and the UK, but also in low and middle income countries.
Okay.
There's been recent data coming out of places like Ghana, Mexico, China and India that suggests that the prevalence of multimorbidity is similar, if not more, than in Australia. Something like about 50% of people over the age of 60 in those countries suffers from two or more chronic conditions. And the burden of chronic conditions can be slightly different in low and middle income countries. Whilst we've been talking about today things like high blood pressure, cholesterol problems, joint disease, in low and middle income countries, there can be what's called a double burden of disease. So the same disease that we've talked about today, but also these are occurring on a background of chronic infectious diseases like tuberculosis and HIV in some parts of the world. So that's a unique aspect of multimorbidity in some low and middle income countries. We know in terms of is this a phenomenon of westernization or urbanization, perhaps is a better
yes.
term. In some ways it is, because it's driven by an aging population. So that is certainly one of the main drivers of the phenomenon we're seeing. But because of all the things I've mentioned about low and middle income countries, it's not just a phenomenon we're seeing in Australia. I think it's something that's happening more broadly. And there are, of course, a number of drivers behind that.
Right. So it is partly age-related, but do you see it in younger people as well?
That is another area where we just don't have good data to inform us. We're lacking a lot of data in younger adults. The prevalence of multimorbidity in younger people, both in high and in low-income countries, is lacking. And certainly the evidence in low and middle income countries more generally is lacking. So rather than mislead you, I'd say that we don't have the research to make a good call on that.
Mm. I know that research is being done globally, and you are affiliated with the George Institute for Global Health in Sydney as well, aren't you?
Yes, that's right.
And you have partners around the world who are also looking at this.
Yes, we work with other researchers from places including Oxford, India and China, looking at the most common chronic conditions occurring worldwide and how we might be able to mitigate the risk of these conditions through a range of interventions, from population health interventions to clinical trials and new medications.
Let's look at the time involved with going to see the doctor. A lot of people say, oh, you know, you're in and out. And a lot of people don't like to take the doctor's time and explore other problems, and they are reluctant to tell a doctor more. Is one of the issues being addressed that looking at a patient holistically will take more time?
Absolutely. I'm not a health policy specialist, but certainly from my own clinical experience, fee for service works great if you have single problems, but it's not as effective if you have multiple chronic conditions. And we need to embrace the efficiencies that go with a more integrated, holistic style of care. And part of that has got to be thinking how we incentivize doctors and other healthcare providers to spend the time to provide holistic care. Now, I don't know what that's going to look like specifically in the future, and we probably need more research to inform those decisions. But whatever the changes that are going to be made are, it's going to have to prioritize and support general practitioners and other healthcare providers to continue to look at patients from a holistic point of view.
As a practicing doctor and a clinical academic, can you take us through what you're looking for when you see a patient? I mean, does thinking of multi-morbidity change the way you look at a patient?
Absolutely. And it changes the decisions, the clinical decisions that I make. It changes the information that I'll give patients. And it really informs everything I do in clinical practice, because it does people no service by focusing on individual conditions at the expense of their other health problems and their broader context. And we know that when people accrue more and more chronic conditions, it becomes increasingly difficult for them to look after themselves. Mm. And so I'm very conscious of that at the same time, that the more things we do for patients with multi-morbidity, the more difficult it can often be. And many of my patients actually see multiple specialists. So it can be a part-time or job seeing multiple different specialists at the same time. And really, to provide good care, you need to take into account all of these factors. The bottom line is we just don't have enough good research and data to inform our decisions at the present time.
How does multi-morbidity affect a caregiver, given that some patients won't be able to care for themselves so easily because they do, you know, they're too unwell in too many areas?
Yeah, it increases the, we know that multi-morbidity increases the demands of care on the patient, but reduces the patient's capacity to manage their care themselves, and right. So therefore carers take on an additional burden. So if we're going to improve our management of multi-morbidity or change the way health systems are designed to deliver care for patients with multi-morbidity, we need to take into account patient and carer perspectives, and that's certainly going to be important going forward.
So the future, as you see it, for handling all of this better, what are the elements you're looking at, thinking about the person holistically as one, putting the infrastructure with government of hospital and medical services is another?
Yeah, those are all important. But taking it a couple of steps back, we need to really understand the long-term trends and patterns better. If we have a better evidence base from which to make decisions, we can improve clinical decisions and systems decisions. In the end, like you said, whatever the outcome is going to be, we're going to need to prioritise general practice, because in Australia, at least, we're very lucky that GPs are the foundation for good holistic care. And then we're going to have to use research to better understand how well health systems are doing at looking after patients with multi-morbidity, and where we can make these health systems how we can make them less fragmented and more efficient. And to do that, we're going to have to integrate services one way or another, and focus more on general medicine rather than increasing subspecialisation, which has been the case for many decades now.
I guess financial implications need to be looked at as well.
No, absolutely. And I think I touched on that previously, that, you know, fee-for-service is great for single problems, but it works less well for multi-morbidity. I don't want to mislead you, rather than mislead you on that, because I'm not a health policy specialist, I won't propose any I can't propose any particular solutions to that. But certainly I think that's an area where we need to think more deeply about how we're going to incentivize people to look after those with multimorbidity.
Sure. When you're talking multimorbidity, are the diseases always chronic, or is there a chance that one or more of them can be cured at some stage?
In most cases, the conditions are chronic or long-term. In a small amount of cases, they can be reversed or cured with lifestyle changes, healthy eating and exercise. For example, we know that eating well and exercising well can reduce people's blood pressure and can in some instances reverse the changes associated with type 2 diabetes. However, in most cases, these chronic conditions are lifelong and need to be managed as such. We know that some conditions seem to cluster together and they share risk factors. For example, heart disease, high blood pressure, cholesterol problems. But in other cases, we know conditions seem to cluster where the risk factors seem to be different. For example, musculoskeletal conditions like osteoarthritis, depression, and heart disease seem to occur together, yet they have slightly different risk factors. So that's really what we're trying to tease out more and more in the research that we do.
When you mentioned depression, that can be because of these other diseases, can't it? I mean, life can become too overwhelming.
Absolutely. And part of the problem with multimorbidity is that as people develop more and more chronic conditions, it can become increasingly hard to manage these simultaneously, both for doctors, but also for patients and their carers.
I imagine managing these conditions, a lot of it can be done by the doctor, you know, the right drugs and the right combinations prescribed. But surely there's a lot that the patient themselves can bring to it, and they would need guidance in that too, wouldn't they?
Yes, absolutely. And a key part of that is making sure people are well informed about their conditions so that they can try and self-manage as many of them as possible and be involved in the decisions that are made about their healthcare.
Now, prevention's always better than cure. Perhaps we can finish up on this. What's the best way that all of us can avoid being in that position where we have multimorbidity?
There are things we can do as individuals, and there are things we can do as a society. As individuals, we all need to try and, as best we can, eat healthy, balanced diets that are high in fresh fruit and vegetables while avoiding highly processed foods and those high in sugar. Exercising regularly, ideally building it into our daily routines, is also important. But the other thing to consider is that while all of these things are great, arguably what's going to make the bigger difference is if we can find ways to make healthier choices the default ones. So, for example, if we can make public transport more available and convenient, we could increase people's daily physical activity. We could use differential taxation to help make healthier foods more affordable, while discouraging less healthy choices. And in fact, the Australian Medical Association and a number of other organisations have recently proposed a sugar tax as just one possible example. Improving and refining our nutritional labelling to help consumers make more informed choices about what we eat is also important. But really underpinning all of this, as you've said previously, Graham, is we need to prioritise and fund preventative care at all levels of government. And I think that's the thing that's going to make the biggest difference.
Thank you.
Thanks very much for having me, Graham.
We've been discussing multimorbidity, where two or more chronic conditions exist in a patient. And my guest has been Dr. Brendan Nguyen, registrar at the Royal Prince Alfred Hospital in Sydney, and clinical lecturer at the University of Sydney. He's involved in the analysis of large global clinical trials as well as population health research, focusing on common chronic diseases such as diabetes, cardiovascular and kidney disease. Thanks for listening. I'm Graham Wilson at the University of Newcastle, and all of us at Wellbeing wish you well.